Hello, welcome to Sport and the Feels in association with Aldi UK, official supermarket partner of Team GB. I'm Jonathan Overend, and this series is all about how sport makes us feel. And when I think back to when I first got into sport as a primary school-aged kid, playing football in the street, cricket in the garden, tennis against the wall, I think to myself, what was it? What was it that really hooked me in? It was the voice. It was the voice that was coming at me from the speaker. And I remember being absolutely transfixed. And when we're talking about people who really inspire you to love sport, to fall in love with sport, the guest on today's pod is that man for me. It's just him. This is a special edition, no co-host today. Voice of football for so long, and gymnastics, and the boat race. And if we're talking the Olympics, badminton as well, tennis, volleyball and handball, plus the cycling road race and the marathon. And don't forget the weightlifting. His first assignment at his first Olympic Games, which was, wait for it, 1968 in Mexico City. 11 Summer Olympic Games. Our guest, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him on, is Barry Davis. Well, Barry, it's lovely to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Are you missing the Olympics, as we all would be tuning in at this time?
Yes, we've seen a few things over years gone by to fill in the gap.
I mean, I suppose when you're there, you get so caught up in your duties and your disciplines. But as a viewer, as I suppose you would have been this time,
yes,
you channel hop a bit, don't you? And you really sort of immerse yourself in all the different sports, some that you didn't even know existed. I always find that as a viewer, it's fun, isn't it?
When I was first with ITV in 1968, the head of the whole thing, there was a press conference, and he went round saying that, well, we got Chris Chataway was the presenter, and you know, went round several names, and then he said, and then we have the two guys who've got to be around all the time, picking up wherever they can, and hoping that they pick up enough knowledge and so on and so forth. We send them hither and thither, and for that role we have Neil Durden Smith,
yes,
pause, and John Bromley had to prompt him. So my start at the Olympic Games, and you are.
It's in the back of my mind somewhere. What would be your earliest Olympic memory, actually?
In a way, my first memory is something that I picked up rather quickly, that when I was rushing around to do sports that I had no idea about, I was sent off to the weightlifting and didn't know what was going on, really. And I sidle up to John Goodbody, who's become a good friend over the years, who was then with the Times, and still is. And at a particular moment, there was a lift, and he said, oh, I'm surprised he allowed that. So late on, I wasn't live in the commentary at all. It was, you know, there was a little sort of 10-minute thing that went out in the evening in all the other sports, as it were. When this lift came up, I said, oh, that's a bit dodgy. So suddenly, I was considered an expert on weightlifting, which I knew nothing about. I had an interesting start, actually, if I could tell you, because I was also doing cycling, bits of cycling.
Yeah. So this was in 68?
This is 1968.
Mexico City.
Lovely Mexico. It was the year I got married. My wife came out. We had a second honeymoon. ITV shows you the change of the times. ITV gave us 6 days, I think it was six, in Acapulco after the games.
Nice.
At their expense. Mark you, as it was the year that I got married, we moved to a different hotel for the one the rest of the group were.
But I've seen quite enough of your colleagues by that point.
I was trying to make sense of the road race. Towards the end of it, as I was sitting in the cubicle, somebody came in and gave me a piece of paper, and there was a message on it. You do know you're doing the start of the marathon after this. And I scribbled, no. And the message came back, well, you are. And here's the list of runners. So, and that was live into news at 10. the start of the marathon.
Wow, really?
Fortunately, as they started off, I identified number this, number that, number that, so on and so forth. And I thought it was going quite well, but then number 10 came past me. I looked quickly for his number, and it was not on the list.
Oh, no.
I had a guess as to where he came from, and he represented that country in the ITV commentary for a matter of 20 seconds at most. Nobody ever knew.
That was over 50 years ago now. Yeah. It's scary, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. Your first Olympic Games. So you joined the BBC fairly soon after the Mexico Games, yeah, primarily for football, of course, for Match of the Day. But yes, the Olympics, presumably at that stage, was still a big draw. Was that part of your ambition at that stage?
I think part of me thought, well, I've been to one game, so they want me to go to another. But
can't stop now.
No. I didn't. I had been offered other things to do in my early time of the BBC. One of them would have involved commentating on Cassius Clay, because two or three people weren't available, David Vine, Harry Carpenter, and so on. And I wanted to make some sort of statement that I wanted to do football, and I didn't want to be just one of the football commentators. Wolstenholme was there, Ken Wolstenholme and David Coleman having a battle between you for the lead role at that stage.
So you turned down that boxing assignment?
Yes,
did
I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. And, you know, I was asked by the then head of sport. I said, no, I don't know enough about boxing to do that. As it turned out, Alan Weeks did the commentary and Henry Cooper did the summaries, so I could probably have got away with it. And I did interview Cassius Clay for a radio programme, British Forces Broadcasting, which I introduced for a few years. So I did meet the man.
Wow. What was he like to talk to? What was he like?
I didn't find it a problem, because one could be a little bit in awe of him. Mm. Maybe that's because I went to the fight at Wembley when Cooper had him on his knees.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah, I was there. And it's not my sport at all, actually. Boxing is one of the few sports that it's got to be a really big fight for me to have any interest.
Were you working at that, Barry?
No.
Just
as a spectator. Sitting three rows ahead of Elizabeth Taylor.
Not in the cheap seats then.
I don't know how, I can't remember how I ever got to...
What was that moment like then, when Henry knocked him down?
Well, crowd went mad. But of course there was always the fear with Henry Cooper that a sock in the eye would be the end of the fight.
You've been there on some amazing occasions behind the microphone, and they're the obvious ones that I would come here to talk to you about, but it's things like that are interesting as well. And I mean, same at the World Cup final, Barry, right? You were in the back,
yes. Oh,
in the
yes,
back of the box, so you
yes,
weren't behind the mic.
Yes.
Would have been nice if you were.
Well, in theory, I had a 1 in 4 chance, because there were 4 commentators for the 4 groups.
Yes.
And we were told to check in after the quarterfinals. I said to John Bromley, he was the best boss I ever worked for, lovely guy, John Bromley, I said, you'll be off your head if you make a change at Wembley. BBC will laugh you out of court. And it was quite right. I mean, I was right in my opinion. I probably shouldn't have expressed it. Hugh Johns and Dave Bowen, the Welsh Arsenal player, were the ITV team. And I stood behind Hugh throughout the commentary.
What was that like? Was the fan in you leaping up and down?
No, I made absolutely certain that you know, I hardly moved my little finger. In the break between the end of 90 minutes and then the move on to extra time, one of the German commentators for ARD, I think, was in the adjoining box, and we sort of chatted briefly. I said to him, I thought that unlucky for England, but maybe his side deserved to be level on the balance of play. Because I've always had the opinion that the England World Cup performance came in extra time when they were really very good. They were good in the second half, but you know, it was a pretty even Steven match over 90 minutes. Mm. Alf did it right when he said, you won it once, now go and win it again.
Yes. Yes. let's move back to the Olympics. So you join the BBC after Mexico. You go to Munich, and from what I can gather, looking back over the what you were assigned, anything with a ball, basically. Anything with a ball. Football, hockey, handball, volleyball.
Volleyball.
How difficult was that to really feel in control of all these different sports?
I worked it out the other day that I've been to 19 Olympics, or was involved, I should say I was involved in 19 Olympics, 12 summer and 7 winter. And I think I did 12 different Olympic sports, but I'm cheating because I didn't do athletics in an Olympics. I did do it at European level, and I didn't do rowing other than the boat race. But I've included both those in 12 as being Olympic sports, which they are.
And you missed out on boxing because you turned down Cassius Clay. So that could have been 13. Well, that's pretty impressive. Yeah. Funny you mentioned rowing. I was going to ask you about that because, I mean, we're talking here a stone's throw from the course of the university boat race, which you did with distinction for so many years, more than a decade. But you were never the voice of rowing at the Olympic Games.
No.
What was that?
I hoped I might get a chance in 2000. But they felt that because that was the time I took over from David Coleman doing the Summer Games ceremonies, that I had enough on my plate already with the gymnastics and so on and so forth.
But no, I mean, it's just a strange one, isn't it? You know, to be the voice of one of the biggest annual events, as in the university boat race, it almost felt like they were maybe underplaying the size of rowing at the time. Why would they want you at the gymnastics, but not at the rowing? Rowing was such a big sport then. Redgrave was taking it onto a new level, and as you say, you were keen to do it, were you?
Yes, I was. Although I wondered, because of the number of different sports, I did wonder whether I was really asking for too much. But Gerald Sinstad, he was the lead commentator on the rowing. Prior to that, he did the Sauer Brothers success.
And actually, your connection with Gerald Sinstad goes right back, doesn't it, to the very start of your career.
He gave me an opportunity when I came out of the army. I went as a general dog's body, mushing around the sports room as it was then, not quite the T-boy, but something pretty close. And then Angus Mackay gave me the role of standing behind the great Eamon Andrews with the script to give to him the next piece, which I was supposed to check to make sure there were no mistakes.
And this is on Sports Report.
This is on Sports Report. And then years later, I did, I think it was 5 Sports Reports. Somebody was on holiday or whatever, it was up to Christmas.
I vaguely remember that period. I think that was after Renton Laidlaw and before John Inverdell.
That's right.
I think, because that was the time when I was really getting into sport on the radio. And strange, I remember that period. I remember you doing Saturday afternoons for a bit.
The first thing I said, I remember it so well, because when
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue, yes. I said, I've always wanted to do this show. First thing I said, I've always wanted to do this show. They never asked me back after that.
Well, you can blame that Inverdell guy for that, because he took over
good.
And he was quite good for a decade or so, wasn't he?
Yeah, there's a man who's not appreciated sufficiently, in my opinion, by distance. Best rugby presenter. And a lot of other things.
I shall pass that on, Barry. He's very much part of our team
good
here.
Good.
So in Olympic world, I suppose we need to get to 1988, don't we, Seoul? And this incredible story of the British hockey team who go on to win gold. You'll tell us about that in a bit, because you were behind the mic famously. But if we're to trace the hockey team and their journey, Barry, you have to go back when? To sort of 1980, would you?
I think we go back to sitting at the airport in 1980, yes. Not me, but the hockey selection to represent Great Britain. And then they learned that the idea of the American president and the prime minister to use sport as a frontline troops meant that the hockey concurred with that view and pulled out of the Olympics of 1980 in Moscow.
So at the last minute, they don't go. And what were they? They were building the team at that point, were they?
They had a good side, a lot of good players, but they weren't high enough in the rankings 4 years later. They were not invited initially to go to the games in Los Angeles. But then the Russians decided they wouldn't go to the games in Los Angeles. So Great Britain were invited, and they got to the semi-finals. And most of those players went forward. In fact, maybe all of them were in the squad. When 88 came around, they were, I think, seeded two. So they were expected to do well. The thing, from my point of view, was that I had been asked by the head of sport, Jonathan Martin, to do the gymnastics. But it meant that the agreement was that Nigel Starmer-Smith started off the hockey and got through as far as the semi-final when I was supposed to take over, because he had to go back for rugby special. And he knew that. And, you know, I had to say yes. I felt really sorry for Nigel that he didn't make it.
Okay. So just to clarify then, your main assignment is the gymnastics.
Yes.
At Seoul 88. And Nigel Starmer-Smith, people remember him, great former scrum half of England. Yeah. He was front and centre on the BBC's rugby coverage at the time, but he was there primarily for the hockey.
Yes.
But they wanted him to come back after the semi-finals to do rugby special.
Yeah.
So you knew that if Britain got to the final, you were going to have the microphone.
Yes. Sean Curley got me out of jail, really, because Great Britain were leading 2-0 and gave away two goals, as the boys would consider it. Sean Curley was absolutely determined they were going to make the final.
Yes. And they were a team. I mean, even now, looking back, and I suppose anyone who didn't live through that era, this might not apply to them. But for people like us, Ian Taylor, Richard Dodds, Imran Shawani, Steve Batchelor, Sean Curley, these are names they're names from my youth, and they're names ingrained in British sporting history, Barry, aren't they? And these are hockey players. This is the pull of the Olympic Games, isn't it?
Yes. I could happily say that all those that you've mentioned have become very good friends. No, good friends. I can't say very good friends. I always get invited when they have an occasion to celebrate what happened in 1988, and nearly all of them turn up. And I always get invited.
That's really nice. And I suppose a lot of that must be down to the fact that they recognise that a lot of, not so much not their achievement, but the way people reflect on their achievement is because of your commentary. And in particular, your words for the third goal, right?
Yes, yes. It's almost a bit embarrassing that is the case. But so many people turned on at 6 o'clock in the morning to watch a hockey match, so that the audience was there. When the third goal went in after Steve Batchelor sprint down one flank and Imran Shawani came in from the other, and that they were a huge part of the success. It was a great performance by the team and a very controlled performance. And when the ball went in, I recapped what had happened and then thought to myself, just thinking about, well, the defence was terrible. So I just said, where were the Germans? And I thought, who gives a damn where the Germans were? So I said, frankly, who cares? I didn't realise how much that, you know, I didn't think about it at the time. It's just what I said. I wanted to call my book that, frankly, who cares? But the book said Barry Davis, and underneath it was written, frankly, who cares? And they thought they might not sell that book too well.
In isolation, doesn't quite work. In context, it's brilliant. It's funny, though, isn't it? Because it's like so many of your other classic commentary lines, you know, interesting, very interesting, or just look at his face. Or it's short, it's sharp, it's not necessarily the greatest prose that's ever been written, but it sticks. commentary lines can be indelible, Barry. Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's become a bit of a cliche of mine that I open my mouth and hope that my foot is sufficiently far away. With Franny Lee, I just saw his intention probably at the same time as he did. Mm. And he hit the ball so well. And then there was the close-up of his face. And this was the guy who'd left Manchester City, who was being applauded by Manchester City supporters having scored for Derby in a season when they went on to win the championship. And so I said, just look at his face. And then lost my voice in the process. But I had the operation soon afterwards, so it was okay.
But it's true, isn't it? Sometimes you just have to use your eyes and feel what the viewer is feeling.
And sometimes you get it wrong. Yeah. But if there was a good general line and there was a shot on goal that produced a good save or whatever, and that was likely to be in the edit because it was edited football in those days, then I might use a general stat. But I didn't like to overdo that. No.
Do you think stats get in the way of modern-day commentary?
Simple answer, yes.
So that line about the leaky German defence in 1988, I remember coming to the hockey in 2012, which you were also commentating on, weren't you? And that huge stand out on the Olympic Park, the very edge of the Olympic Park. Did you get lots of people coming up to you throughout that tournament?
Yes.
Wanting to chat about 88, hockey fans, saying this is the reason I got into this sport, for example?
Saying things like that, yes. I mean, it's extraordinary.
Have you ever answered your own question, Barry? Where were the Germans? People must have come up with some creative ideas over the years. I mean, where were the Germans, Barry?
That's quite true, yeah. I don't know. I think they were just torn to shreds by the pace of the movement. They just didn't get people in contact.
And you know what? Frankly, who cares?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Who cares? To this day, who cares? How did you feel about 2012? Because you were in Singapore, weren't you? When Lord Coe and Princess Anne and David Beckham won the bid in 2005. Yes. Can you remember, you know, as a man who lives in London, can you remember how you felt at that moment?
Oh, yes. I remember saying to one of the IOC members who said to me, you can lose your chance of being the selected candidate in the presentation on that day, but you can't win one. I said, I think this might just be the exception. And it got down to the last two in a chaotic way of explanations going on about how to use the vote for all the members and so on. It was a bit of a farce. But when it got down to the serious part, all the cameramen had moved, or nearly all, had moved over to be where the French collection of people were. And I did begin to wonder then whether it had leaked out.
But Paris were going to sneak it.
The Paris by were, going to, were yeah. going to be given the games of 2012. But I made no thought in my mind as to what I was going to say. And I just reacted. And with total delight, pointing out the advantages, how this could be used, and so on and so forth. I shook hands with her Royal Highness Princess Anne, which you're not supposed to do because I offer the home first, and with Craig Reedy, who's been a good chum of mine over the years and with whom I did badminton. It just was the greatest thing. When it actually came about, I think it was brilliantly done. And I enjoyed doing the ceremony for the world, not for domestic. And it was quite difficult what our friend had set us to keep tabs on.
You mean the complexity of Danny Boyle's opening ceremony?
Yes. And that's because the last thing I ever did was the closing ceremony, which I did with an Australian swimmer who I'd only met 2 days before. We were put together. I was always going to do it, but there was some doubt about who was going to be there alongside me. And you'd have thought we'd known each other all our lives because we just fitted in. It was wonderful to end. At least that's how I felt.
That was how your Olympic broadcasting career ended.
Yes.
With the Spice Girls. It started with weightlifting in Mexico and ended with the Spice Girls. I mean, this is Barry Davis we're talking to. That's a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But in between, so many amazing memories. And, you know, we're so lucky to have worked with, met and spent time in the company. I mean, you more so than anyone, with some of the greats of sport in so many different sports. Do you look back now and think, oh, how lucky I've been to have shared time with all these people?
Somebody asked me the other day on something I did for Radio 2, when I look back on how would I sum up my life, working life, and I said, lucky, lucky, lucky. I was just lucky.
Barry, it's been a pleasure sitting here having a chat with you about all your Olympic memories and sporting memories beyond that as well. Great life, great thing to reflect on.
Thank you. I could stay here all afternoon talking to people like you. It's
been fun.
Great pleasure.
The great Barry Davis there, veteran of, what did he say, 19 Olympic Games, 12 summer, 7 winter. That one he didn't go to, by the way, was 1980 in Moscow. But he still covered it from back at the BBC base. And I've said this before, actually, on the radio, but when I think of everyone I've come across in the sports broadcasting world over the years, I don't think there's one person, I don't think there can be one person who hasn't been influenced or inspired by that man. Great to have him on the pod. Thanks again to Barry Davis. Make sure you subscribe if you've missed any of the episodes so far, and be sure to catch us again on Sport and the Fields.
Sport and the Fields is a 94.19 independent production.
In association with Aldi UK, the official supermarket partner of Team GB.